Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at AccelerateShares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode 83 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kessler.
Today is Monday, August 24th, 2020, on the tail end of summer here. A little bit slow in the markets, but we expect things to pick up come September when everyone's back in the seats, back at the desks, back in the office, hopefully. I mean, we certainly are, but many people still working from home. But if you look at what the market's done since the March lows, I mean, S&P 500 hitting new all-time highs, it's basically completely forgotten about that whole coronavirus pandemic. But nonetheless, we have a few interesting things to chat about in the markets, just reviewing what happened last week and key insights on those important events. Off the top, wanted to chat about interesting news in SPAC land. Former House Speaker Paul Ryan, yeah, that's right, politician Paul Ryan, is launching his own blank check IPO. That's right, Paul Ryan launching a SPAC. And we ask, does this mark peak of the SPAC market? Onto Apple news, their market cap ripened to $2 trillion. Is this valuation justified, or is this just a big stock market bubble, as Donald Trump used to claim prior to becoming president, but now he loves tweeting about new all-time highs? And lastly, touching on Epic Games, the creator of Fortnite, the Battle Royale game that every kid loves. They're actually suing Apple and Google in a big App Store dust-up. What's the issue behind this lawsuit? But first, let's chat about really interesting news in SPAC land. Former politician Paul Ryan is trying his hand at another form of deal-making outside of the political arena, this time in the business arena. So he will serve as chairman of special purpose acquisition company called Executive Network Partnering Corp. Its ticker is ENPC. Solomir Capital, a private equity firm run by Mitt Romney's son, is set to be the main sponsor. So clearly, everyone involved in this one seems to have pretty tight political connections. The company will be called, nicknamed CAPS, C-A-P-S, which is an acronym for capital which aligns and partners with a sponsor, or conveniently SPAC backward. Fairly clever team here, I suppose. The launch of SPACs involving people far outside the areas of business. I mean, previously we saw Red Bull Acquisition Corp, which featured Billy Bean of Moneyball fame, so the famed baseball manager getting into the SPAC game. Now we have a former House Speaker launching his own SPAC, so certainly it really branching outside the areas of business further signifies how far this asset class has come, and also indicates that perhaps the market is a tad bit frothy. I mean, we're seeing S1 filings left and right for basically multiple new SPACs filing every day for an IPO. Just want to put some numbers behind the sentiment here. So far in 2020, new listings of 75 SPACs have raised nearly $30 billion. That's more than double what was raised during all of 2019. And we have that over the first 8 months of the year. And 2019 was the highest volume year on record for SPACs. So 2020 absolutely blowing the previous record out of the water. This year, SPACs account for roughly 43% of IPO volume, which is a near record year for IPOs in 2020. It hasn't been this great in IPO land since the 2000 tech bubble. So a lot going on in the SPAC asset class. Clearly things are looking frothy here. I'm not sure if we've reached the peak. I expect quite a bit more. A lot of companies, especially companies in the earlier stages of their growth, are choosing to utilize the SPAC structure for a number of reasons. I mean, we have Virgin Galactic, we have Nikola, these super successful, at least in the stock market, super successful companies that utilize SPAC, and each and every day we're seeing new deals announced specifically in the electric vehicle space or anything to do with that sector, which is super hot right now, especially for blank check companies. But interesting dynamic. Mike, what do you think? Do you think that Paul Ryan's SPAC, which actually filed its S-1 today, ENPC, they're raising $300 million. Do you think this marks the peak of the market?
Yeah, I guess it defines how you define the peak. And I would argue that we may be close to peak SPAC sentiment in the sense of the overall market share or mind share that SPACs have in the average investor's time during their day. But as well, just looking at other avenues that typically would never be focused on SPACs, so things such as the daily email from Fortune term sheet, they've talked about SPACs a lot lately, which is just very interesting in terms of the mindshare that SPACs have been getting.
Yeah, the other thing is that pretty much every startup founder now knows exactly what a SPAC is and has their eye on the asset class.
And they really should know, especially any VC-backed founder should have an understanding of what a SPAC is if they ever intend on going public. But in terms of being the peak, I don't think that we're anywhere near the actual peak in terms of SPAC volume peak. Because as you had mentioned, 2019 it's just been a steady growth in the sector for the last number of years, a real multi-year trend. But as well, looking forward into how this sort of trend can continue, is I think the big key for them will be some of these large $1 billion plus SPACs finding targets. And I think that will go a long way in further legitimizing the space. If you see an Airbnb or a company of that stature that goes public through a SPAC, I think that would do a lot in terms of the space. And a little example on this is, a couple of days ago, it was reported once again that Palantir, the Peter Thiel-backed company, that they were looking to file their S-1 soon. But also with that, there was leaks regarding their loss numbers. And prior to this, it had been assumed for a few years here, as it's not a new company, I believe you had mentioned, Julian, that it's about 16 years old, and that it was always assumed that they were a profitable business because they are a little bit more mature company, a little bit lower growth.
Yeah, you figure after 16 years, they'd figure out their business model on how to be profitable.
Exactly. And so during the IPO process with the quiet period, you can only discuss what's disclosed in your prospectus. So if there's just the big loss number and you can't really explain it away too much in terms of the actual numbers in a prospectus because it's a legal document. There's not much room for just speculation and things of that nature.
Yeah, and look what happened to WeWork during their quiet period after they filed the S-1. They just got absolutely torn apart.
Yes, because at the end of the day, during that quiet period, is you lose the narrative. You lose control of the narrative, whereas during a SPAC process, because it's done through a merger, is you can talk about what the pro forma company will do.
Marketing.
You could talk about your estimates in terms of where you think the business is going to be in a few years. It leaves you a lot more flexibility, and that's what I think is going to be really interesting in drawing more attention to SPACs for founders, as it just gives them more flexibility in telling their story, which I think any founder that is going to be a large public company needs to be able to do, and probably does quite well, as they've pitched VCs already to get capital into that company.
I wanted to mention one number, $2 trillion. Now, $2 trillion is significant because that is the market cap in which Apple hit last week, largest publicly traded company in the world. It just recently hit $1 trillion, I believe, in August 2018. So they increased $1 trillion of shareholder value in a pretty quick time period, 2 years. And in fact, their stock more than doubled off its March lows, and that created over $1 trillion of shareholder value. So something to realize is if you're buying the S&P 500, these large cap growth names are taking up a larger and larger share of the benchmark index. I believe Apple is now north of 6%, and perhaps might be even larger than the entire TSX in terms of that $2 trillion size. And one thing that I wanted to note is Apple's a really interesting stock for one main reason, and that is sentiment. if we go all the way back to 2013, and I've always been a big fan of Apple and was a huge fan of the stock, especially back in 2013, and if we rewind to that time period, if you remember, Carl Icahn was undergoing an activist campaign on Apple, and the reason is, I mean, it was dirt cheap. It was trading at 4.5 times EBITDA, was universally hated. One of Carl Icahn's theses, or one of the crux of his thesis, was that it was so underweight by mutual fund managers that they would have to be buying, you know, as the stock does, better and better within the index, or they'd risk underperforming. And he certainly nailed it then. He called Apple at 4.5 times EBITDA and a quote no-brainer, which, I mean, turned out to be fantastically true. I believe since 2013, the stock compounded at about 33% annualized on a total return basis, an absolute monster of a stock. And it's gone from 4.5 times EBITDA 7 years ago to 25 times EBITDA, its largest multiple, I believe, ever. Everyone hated the stock in 2013. Now it's universally loved in 2020. The multiple gone up over fivefold, and it's just incredible to see, because, you know, it's pretty much the exact same company, still selling iPhones, still got the Apple Store. Certainly they are trying to tune investors' perception away from being a straight hardware company to more of this services integrated company with more stable cash flows. Certainly the bearish thesis has not come to fruition. I remember shortly after, or at the same time that Icahn, you know, he made a bunch of money on the stock, was successful in his activist campaign shortly after commencing it, he was exiting the stock, worried about China, etc. Warren Buffett got into the stock, and as we know, I believe he's earned, what, like $100 billion off of it or something?
Yeah, $87 billion.
Which could be, or perhaps, one of the best investments of all time. Wanted to give a bit of background, in addition to sort of that tremendous multiple expansion, which is really story for the ages over the past 7 years, driving the S&P 500. You didn't see it with only Apple, but other companies as well. I mean, Apple, it's kind of gone from zero to hero multiple times. In the mid-1990s, it was struggling, went through 3 CEOs in 4 years prior to bringing back Steve Jobs. And he went on to introduce the iPod, the iPhone, and the iPad, which were all just grand slam of hit products. Those helped Apple become the largest U.S. company in 2011 when it surpassed ExxonMobil. Unfortunately, Steve Jobs died a few months later, and then Tim Cook became CEO. And I remember back then, 2011, no one thought that Tim Cook could do the job that he did. I mean, he's been one of the best CEOs of all time in what he's done with Apple, really continued innovation that most people thought he wouldn't be able to after Mr. Jobs passed. But nonetheless, I mean, you look back in 2011 when Apple initially toppled Exxon to become the largest U.S. listed company. It's now 11 times bigger than Exxon. So it really shows the divergence in sentiment between tech and oil. It's, you know, that's really the story right there. Apple, 100% sentiment driven. I just wanted to point that out. Michael, what are your thoughts on this milestone $2 trillion figure?
Yeah, when you talk about the sentiment and multiple expansion, it, for any aspiring hedge fund junior analysts, or on the mutual fund side, any sort of investment analyst, if you are pitching your portfolio manager on a stock thesis and your thesis is 100% geared towards multiple expansion, that is probably the not going to work for your portfolio manager. They will laugh you out of the room, as that's typically something that is very outside of your control and your analysis in terms of that. Whereas,
yeah, but conversely, that really is the crux of value investing, where you're just buying these dirt cheap stocks and waiting on that multiple expansion, which unfortunately for most has not really worked over the past decade. Aside from Apple and Microsoft.
And typically, to de-risk, I guess, your thesis, you would be looking at levers that the company can control in terms of increasing their earnings organically, and then hoping, I guess, for some multiple expansion, but really basing the crux of your thesis on that actual earnings power increase.
The other thing to mention, I mean, multiple indicates kind of risk, in my opinion. If it's trading at 4.5 times EBITDA, there's typically many ways to win, and like, it can't go much lower than that unless it's going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, unless it's just a very clear melting ice cube where the earnings today are not representative of where their earnings will be in the next couple of years.
Right.
But on the topic of Tim Cook, with regards to the sentiment on him when he took over from Jobs, the view was that he wouldn't be able to innovate. And in the product sense, it's not like he is even in the same realm as Steve Jobs in terms of a product sense of innovation.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I mean, you can't really recreate the iPhone, but you know, he did have a couple big wins in terms of the watch and the AirPods. I mean, those products are pretty universally loved and absolutely dominate, basically created an entire sector.
Yeah, and what I would focus more on would be the innovation in their business model, moving right. from product hardware to the services side, which, yes, it's not innovation in the most direct product sense, but it still is innovation and very interesting. And one thing as well that you had mentioned was Buffett's profits here. And, you know, the scale of that is just massive, where his cost basis only a few years ago was $35 billion, where their value is on a pre-tax basis is $122 billion. Obviously, he has a lot of unrealized gains there. But as well, I mean, Berkshire is now, this accounts for 44% of Berkshire's stock portfolio. So it's a very concentrated bet that Berkshire is making on Apple, with Berkshire being the third largest shareholder of Apple. But as well, you look at what has happened with Apple over the last year, where they're up over 150% over the past 12 months, where Berkshire is down 8% this year.
Right.
And when you look at in terms of the Berkshire investment today versus in the 90s and early 90s and late 90s, where as an investor in Berkshire at that time, you were very levered to Berkshire's stock portfolio. So levered to Buffett's stock picking abilities.
Yeah.
Now, the operating companies play a lot larger role than the actual stock picking. So it's no longer just a pure play on Buffett's alpha. But the really interesting thing is a lot of this sentiment in Apple is really due to the view on services revenue, one of their main sources of revenue in that being the App Store, which we are going to be talking about, versus hardware, and what investors view that potential has versus the kind of saturation of the hardware market moving forward.
And it's interesting that you mentioned their App Store because, as you indicated, Apple and also Google, you know, they're trying to promote, say, their App Store, the services business, really consistent revenue stream that investors should place a high multiple on just due to its profitability, its consistency, and its
capital-light nature.
Yeah, exactly. But what's been happening is that business model is perhaps at risk. It's Epic Games, the creator of the wildly popular online battle royale game Fortnite, they're suing both Apple and Google, claiming that the tech giant's App Store fees are anti-competitive. I believe both charge Fortnite 30%. A 30% rake on any revenue that game players, you know, they're buying skins, they're buying axes, or whatever they're buying in Fortnite. You got to hand over 30% of any of those fees to Apple just for basically hosting the game. What Fortnite did is they implemented a method in which customers could pay for in-game items without paying the platform provider's 30% fees, and boy, did they not like that. Both Apple and Google banned Fortnite from their app stores, alleging a violation of company policy. Obviously, they can't have people doing that, or else every single app store would do the same and get around all the fees, and there goes Apple and Google's app store services business. Nonetheless, Fortnite or Epic Games sued, launched lawsuits against both Apple and Google, arguing that the company's rules surrounding in-app payments are anti-competitive. Both Apple and Google came back, stated that their platform rules are designed for the safety and security of mobile users. But what I wanted to point out here is this case, although highly unlikely to be successful, it does underline the risk in this business model transformation from, you know, relying on hardware in Apple's case and advertising in Google's case, this transition to these App Store type businesses, the large amount of fees that they are taking. Both companies have built sizable consistent revenue streams out of their app stores, and investors have placed very high multiples on this. But in my opinion, what Epic Games, Fortnite trying to do is really start a movement trying to get others, say like Facebook and other app creators to join this movement and really stand up to these tech giants and demand lower fees. What are your thoughts on what's going to happen here?
So I guess I'd have to go over a little bit of what Epic's thinking with this lawsuit, as well as I think I have a little bit of a different opinion on what the success that any sort of movement could have theoretically. But I guess at the very first glance is that Epic's court filing in the case that they're bringing against Apple, and I'm mostly focused on Apple in particular, as they are a lot more stringent in their app store than Google is, and that's been they've been the main one that people have talked about. But their argument isn't that app developers should pay less commission in their documents. They've actually argued that instead that the court should dismantle the entire app store model, removing all the barriers to entry that Apple and Google have created in terms of the store and then the payment processing, which is the very important aspect, which has been a huge advantage for them. But when you're looking at that, so it's one thing to say that 30% is a very high take rate, but there's also the fact that when the App Store was developed, that it really took the job of the App Store curation, so app curation of what's available to you, and payments onto that platform, which was good for non-technical users and making apps a lot more broadly accessible, as technical users would be able to look at apps and they'd be able to change the privacy settings so that, you know, an app wasn't able to steal your credit card information or take data that they don't want.
Or one of the best things are not having to worry about viruses. I remember back in the day, you know, you download something on your Dell, next thing you know, it's going haywire and doesn't work anymore because the game was actually a virus.
Exactly. And this is what's being called the sandbox approach, where as an app developer, you have to build something that can fit within the iOS framework, and really removed the element of trust, where you would simply just have to trust Apple as a platform as opposed to every single app developer. And so in terms of creating a movement where anybody can do payments within their own app, is only really viable for someone like Fortnite, who has a ton of trust in the public, or other very large brands. So really, in terms of anti-competitiveness, doing something like that would actually just further instill the competitors that have big brands as an ever dominant position in terms of the developers.
Yeah, you have a good point that the App Store does provide a lot of value in terms of lead generation, safety, security, payments, so they are right to charge something because they are providing a valuable service. But the key question here is that take rate of 30% just too high?
Yeah, and so when Epic had put in their own in-app store within the game of Fortnite, they had lowered the take rate, I believe it was to somewhere around 12%, which was basically their break-even cost, which is interesting because where the 30% with Apple came from was actually Steve Jobs, where they never intended in the Jobs era to ever take a profit on the App Store. They were just running it to be break-even, which is quite interesting. But now it's such a large revenue generator that they can't really afford to not actually make a profit on it. But in terms of the battle that Epic's going for, and I agree with you, Julian, I think they're highly unlikely to prevail with this. But it is, I did want to point out that it is fundamentally different to the battle that Spotify is fighting with Apple, if some of our listeners have been following that situation. In this situation, Epic's margins would allow them to pay the fee. They have quite high profit margins. It's not a question of can they, it's just a matter of Epic really likes to be developer friendly, and they like to create the ecosystem. Whereas Spotify literally cannot pay a 30% fee on top of their entire margin structure right now, because 65 cents of every dollar in Spotify for subscriber revenue is going to the music labels.
Yeah, they can't make money as it is right now.
Exactly. And so adding another tax on that they would not be able to continue as a business. So it is a fundamentally different deal. but as well would like to point out that other large companies have come to terms with Apple and decreased that take rate. Say, for example, Amazon Prime Video, they've reduced that take rate from 30% to 15%. And there were rumors prior to all this that Epic and Apple were actually in negotiations. And it's very clear that these obviously broke down. And here we are with lawsuits filed. So I think the most likely event with this is because antitrust law is just, or the anti-competitive legal structure is just takes a very long time to go through the courts, that this is likely just a bargaining chip in negotiations, and that both parties will settle, and Fortnite or Epic Games will agree to a lower than 30% take rate, and they will move on, not happily ever after, but they will move on as partners.
Yeah, good summary on that case there. To wrap up the podcast here, are we at peaks back? No. I expect more charlatans to come into the business. Where some guesses, I'd say Michael Jordan, Drake, Leonardo DiCaprio. Those are my three top picks. Who do you think is going to be an odd duck in the SPAC space?
I think Ashton Kutcher, since his involvement in the VC world, I think he's highly likely. As you mentioned, like the NBA players, they've been really very good in terms of their business managers and themselves as public figures and getting involved in the VC world. So maybe Kevin Durant or somebody like that could get involved, given his connections to Silicon Valley.
Right.
But it'll be interesting to follow.
Yeah, maybe Ryan Reynolds as well. As for stock market bubble, Apple bubble, certainly. I mean, you can't really justify that sort of multiple expansion. But nonetheless, that wraps it up for us on the Absolute Return podcast. If you enjoyed it, definitely leave us a review. Check out more at absolutereturnpodcast.com. Mike, where can they follow you on Twitter?
You can find me at @M_Kesslering.
And my Twitter handle is @JulianKlymochko, KlyMochko. We wish you all the best in your investing this week, and we'll chat with you soon. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.